Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 81.
This week on the podcast, as we head into week two of the government shutdown, the GOP's goals become even less clear.
And Boehner's stubborn antics cause an influx of wounded GOP pride and open some doors for Democratic contenders in 2014.
The government shutdown opens a Pandora's box of crazy shenanigans for the furloughed Capitol Police to deal with.
And it turns out millions of people were looking for cheaper health care. Good thing the Obamacare exchange has started this week.
Plus, Wendy Davis heeds our advice and announces her candidacy for governor with a populist bang.
All this and more. This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent Thornburg.
I'm Lila Nordstrom, and you can find us on the internet at www.braintrustlive.com. It's that simple. And then you'll know. Then you'll just know what you need to know about us.
That's it.
That's everything. Exciting week.
Oh my gosh.
In the worst way.
Totally.
It was the worst exciting week ever.
We're entering week two of the shutdown coming up here
this
week.
Yep. If you had plans to visit Yosemite this weekend.
Don't do it.
You couldn't have done it. Yeah.
Mm-mm.
There's no real end in sight because there's no real bargaining positions being taken by anyone who's involved.
No.
So, today, or yesterday, if you're listening to this on Monday, Boehner came out and said that he doesn't have the votes to pass a clean funding bill for the government. As you know, the Republicans seem to think that they somehow deserve, like, a special gift for even being willing to fund the government in the first place. They wanted it to be ending Obamacare to some degree. But the Democrats are not willing to get rid of their landmark legislation, so...
Well... I know. It seems to be coming to as a shock to him, too.
Right. It's like if I was like, I will hang out with you later if you cut your head off. If you still have a head, though, like, it's just like asking for nonsense.
Yeah.
That's a crazy thing to ask for.
It's
not negotiating. But in any case, we've said this before.
Right. And also, he's lying because he has the votes.
The problem is more that he's lying because there are definitely the votes.
Enough votes who are on the record. There are enough Republicans. There's 21 who have come out in favor, like, publicly and said that they would vote for a clean resolution, which is basically the funding of the government.
And you only need 17 to do that.
Right.
So
plus all of the Democrats who would obviously vote for it. And not only that, those are just the ones that we know about.
Right.
If this got brought to an actual vote...
There would be some that to save their hide would do it.
There would be a ton of them. Yeah. I think only the nut jobs would not vote for it.
If it actually
got brought to a vote, I think it would have probably 350 or 400 votes.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because Devin, I was listening to an interview with Devin Nunes, who's from California, and he said that he's one of the, you know, we're going to get to a story pretty soon about the Republicans sort of having a civil war about this.
Right.
But he basically said, he was like, you know, there are probably a couple hundred of us who agree that we should be funding the government right now and would pass the clean, the CR.
Yeah.
And
we're also going to talk in a little bit about this Ezra Klein story from the Washington Post that explains what the Civil War is all about, where, I mean, they basically say the same thing, and they talk about sort of how this caucus came to dominate the Republican Party. Because basically, what I think I read this in Slate or somewhere, what people are saying is that it's not that Boehner doesn't have the votes. Everyone knows that votes, I mean, they've been passing clean CR bills every 2 months for years. So obviously they have the votes to do that. What the issue is that Boehner doesn't gain anything by trying to bargain with the Tea Party because they'll just try to shut down, you know, they'll eat their own. They don't care.
They will.
They'll primary anyone they damn well
please.
So they'll eat their own. The moderates don't gain anything by outing themselves as being in favor of a clean CR because they don't want to be primaried.
Right.
So if he brings it to a vote, he's outing the moderates. And if he leaves it, then he's sort of like outing the Tea Party, but they kind of are out anyway. Like, he's safer to just not do anything.
Right.
For himself.
Right.
Because he's scared of the Tea Party, and he's scared of the moderates being angry that he's outed them.
Right.
It's easier for all of the Republicans if they don't have to make a decision here.
I agree with that, and I understand sort of the spot that he's in, but I think that if he had a little bit more balls, they could make these 40 people irrelevant.
Yes.
And that's what they're not doing right now. They're letting 40 people run the entire country, and
that's what they failed to do during the fiscal cliff negotiations. Right. I mean, the problem is he's already weakened himself to the Tea Party to the degree that he doesn't have the kind of authority that a Republican, you know, majority leader or the House Speaker is supposed to have.
Right.
He's supposed to protect the moderates from the fringes. Like, that's his job. That's,
right.
That's why they don't elect Dennis Kucinich, or they didn't when he was in office, to be the speaker. For a Democratic
right,
House.
Of course.
Because he is a fringe, you know, Democrat. That's what your job is as a leadership position in
yes.
the House. But you have to assume that everyone is there to get something done, which is what he does not have.
No.
And he's terrified of them because they nearly made him cry over the whole fiscal cliff. everything does.
I was going to say.
But, I mean, he's terrified of them. He likes being Speaker because it's, like, kind of a high for him, I think. But
probably.
But he doesn't have anyone to negotiate with.
No.
Because everyone in his caucus is afraid of these 40 crazies.
Yeah.
Because they are... Well, I mean, Ezra Klein said this, I think, in a really genius way, but he said something like, they're willing to burn down the House.
Right.
You can't compromise with people that are willing to burn down the House.
But we are sort of starting to see some people who are less afraid of calling
yes.
them out on their shit, which is awesome.
Yes. The problem is that none of them have signaled any willingness to sign on to the Democrats' latest
right.
plan, which is to they're basically going to use this, like, obscure parliamentary
it's
procedure.
It's a suspect plan. But at least they're trying.
They have to do something.
They should try this very publicly,
yes.
too, because basically what they're trying to do is they're trying to take
an existing bill. They're going to substitute
change
the language. And then they're going to basically require everyone to sign a petition to bring it to the floor.
Right.
And that they have like 7 days to do this or something. They're using some random procedure that normally involves a 30-day waiting period, but they're going to have seven
right.
days. No, I don't understand
it
why.
It hasn't been done since 2002. It's
right.
not something that's like, you know, it's not
a,
in heavy practice.
It's a procedure that you use as a minority party to bring a bill that has popular support, but the speaker won't bring to the floor.
Right.
The
last time they did this was McCain-Feingold
exactly.
in 2002.
They basically have to force it out of committee. And so they basically, like, file a petition with the Rules Committee to make that happen.
Right.
No one thinks this is going to work. If it worked, though, the earliest that the vote would happen would be October 14th. So we still have an exciting week of fun to see this through. It's being led by George Miller and Chris Van Hollen, who are both Democrats. Miller's from California and Hollen's from Maryland. And they need 18 Republicans to sign on to this petition.
Right.
And it's such an affront to the leadership that they don't think they're going to be able to get...
Right.
I mean, they may think they're going to be able to. I don't think they're
right.
going to be able to.
We know that there are 21 people who have come out publicly in favor of voting for the Clean CR, but coming out in favor of it and basically signing a petition against your party's leadership are two different things.
Well,
and
also, Peter King, who's been the sort of leading the charge to have the clean bill come to the floor, even said he wouldn't sign this
right.
thing.
Right, if he's not going to sign it, nobody else is going to sign it.
And he said this in an interview. He was on Fox News Sunday. He said this in an interview where he basically said that the Republicans were to blame for the shutdown, that it was their
yeah.
fault, that they were having, you know, that they were taking the country sort
right.
of into dangerous waters.
Yes.
But
he literally said, we are the ones.
Yeah, he said, we are the ones who shut the government down. He also, you know, blamed Ted Cruz for being a wingbat, as anyone with a brain would.
Uh-huh.
But he said, you know, basically that he wouldn't risk signing this weird petition.
Yeah.
Because then he loses all the authority with the party that he has. Right,
right
now, he's seeming like a real hero among the Republicans.
Right, yeah. He's like the hero of, like, the, you know, 200
yeah.
and some thinking Republicans. But, I mean, as soon as he sort of, like, you know, goes along with the Democrats by himself, then that's a surefire way to not
to
be in a great
Lieberman
place.
Town.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, though, I mean, I think what he and a bunch of other Republicans sort of know and are not saying out loud is that they have already won, ultimately,
right.
because this budget, this CR, funds the government at sequestration levels.
Right, and that's something that the Democrats gave in on already. But, you know, in sort of the Republicans' defense, the Democrats have done such a... I didn't know this. Not only are they bad negotiators, but I was not aware until fairly recently that this Clean CR was at sequestration levels. Like,
oh, yeah.
The Democrats need to be telling, like, because all week we've been hearing about how the Democrats, like, won't compromise on this. We blogged about all of the things that the Democrats have compromised in the past, but I didn't know they'd already compromised on this. They gave everything away.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave...
I feel like if the Republicans are going to come at it from a place of We need this plus something crazy. The Democrats should be like, fine. Then we will, we, our offer is to fund the government at, you know, 2008 levels or whatever. Like, they should counter with something that also, so that the Republicans, because my thought is, the Republicans are acting like children. Everybody knows this.
Yes.
They need to feel like they won something for their self-esteem reasons.
Yes.
And because of that, they're not, you know, I mean, we even have them on the record saying that this is just a pride issue at this point. We have Republicans who are now going on television, and were last week even, being like, well, we don't really know what we want. We just need something. We need to get something out of this for pride reasons.
Yes.
So if the Democrats made an offer that was more in line with their principles, then they could compromise on this clean CR that we have right now.
Yeah.
Right now, they're starting from a place of terrible. The Republicans are starting from a place of even worse. And it's like, why would we compromise? We're basically barely funding the government with a CR.
Yeah.
So, like, why is this a compromise?
Yeah.
It's not. So.
But this is a problem with the Democrats'
negotiating strategy in general, which is always suspect.
Yes.
Yeah. But even, you know, we have Doug Lamborn, who's a Colorado Republican, acknowledging even that just the fact that the CR is at sequestration levels is already a compromise.
Yes.
He still, you know, wanted to shut down the government.
Right.
Because he's a dingbat. I'm using dingbat as my new favorite.
I like that.
My word of
and wingbat.
Wingbat, dingbat.
Sure.
A lot of bats.
All sorts of bats.
Very bat-heavy kind of podcast. But anyway, this Washington Post article that Ezra Klein wrote is, I think, the most fascinating thing I've read.
It's really great.
Because
yeah.
it really, and I think we should post it. It really explains what's going on with the Republican Party. And basically, he sort of posits that this isn't really about Boehner negotiating with the Democrats or with the White House or with any entity aside from his own party.
Right.
And it really has to do with this weird power vacuum that's been created by this minority that is so balls to the walls crazy that there's no sort of system in place for dealing with them. Because the problem is, normally, you know, you get into government and you understand that there's a compromise element to governing.
Yes.
And everyone is there to get something done, whether that be a good thing or a bad thing.
That's, right.
You know, everyone has the same ultimate goal, which is to get something done that can get them reelected.
Right. They don't have that goal.
They have gerrymandered themselves into a situation in which they have these uber-safe districts. You know, I think last week or the week before, I read that Tea Party districts, which are only 18% of the congressional districts, I think are the only districts in America getting whiter. Like, they've created these districts that are these, like, ultra-white, ultra-angry, ultra-reactionary enclaves where there's no challenge to the leadership of the Tea Party. There's no one there to challenge them. There's no money to challenge them.
Yeah.
You know, it's only 30 or 40 Republicans,
right.
But that's enough. And, you know, Boehner already sort of lost his power with them during the fiscal cliff negotiations, so he doesn't really have the authority to, like, control them the way that someone needs to. But more importantly, like, they don't have any strategic concerns or pragmatic concerns.
No.
I mean, that's what Ezra Klein was saying. Like, they don't have any, like, of the concerns that temper your behavior when you're in government.
And they also...
So they can just be as crazy as they want to be.
Yeah, they can. Well, and they also don't have to have any sort of... They don't have to have any end game, basically.
Well,
in life they don't have to, but even in this sort of spot that we're in right now, you know, they've had this plan for a while. I mean, this plan has been a couple months in the making. I mean, to, you know, take down the government and try and stop Obamacare has been sort of something that they cooked up when they were, you know, on vacation back in their loony districts this summer. And they've been planning on doing it. We talked months ago on the podcast about how somebody said that they were going to do it.
Right.
They've had this plan and didn't know what they were going to do after it happened.
Yeah.
It's sort of like one of those things where it's sort of like, well, we shut down the government. Now what? They don't have to care.
No.
They shut it down.
That's
it.
They are going to get reelected.
Their job is done. They shut down the government. Now what?
They've already won their reelection campaign.
There was, I don't have the quote in front of me, but there was that Democratic congressman who said, so now what? We sit around and fucking wait until they realize they lost?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like, because now there's just sort of like, well, we did that.
Well, and that's the thing. They don't want to make a deal. They don't need to make a deal.
No.
They don't need to be reasonable.
Who cares?
They have nothing to lose by being as Looney Tunes as they want to be.
Yeah.
And someone like Boehner, who's a traditional politician, really has no strategy for dealing with that, because who would expect that fucking nonsense to be coming up
from an elected leader?
Leader. That's bonkers town.
It is.
I mean, that's some really bonkers nonsense. But the other thing is that Tea Partiers have a very black and white way of viewing these issues. So you know, the Democrats learned this in 2011. You can't negotiate with them because they don't negotiate.
Right.
They just have what they think and they only do that. The Republicans now are having to negotiate with them, and they can't because these crazies won't negotiate even with their own party.
Right.
So, you know, there's basically this, there's a litmus test now where moderate Republicans either are with the Tea Party or against them.
Yes.
And Boehner has to be either with them or against them. He can't sort of represent all of the concerns of his caucus at the same time and appease these crazies.
Right.
And these crazies just have all of this power because they can primary people at any time. Like, couldn't I primary people at any time? Can't any reasonable person also primary them at any time?
But here's the thing about that, is that I... See, the reason that I think that we're starting to see some of these people come out against these wackos is because there are not that many gerrymandered districts. Like, Peter King is from New York. He's not going to lose to a crazy primary nut job. And even if he did, that's a surefire way for the Democrat to retake that seat. Because, you know, not every single Republican district is crazy. I mean, there are a ton of California Republicans who are sort of, like, reasonable. I mean, Devin Nunes is the other one who sort of has been out talking about this with Peter King. You know, he's from California. He's not going to get primaried by a crazy loser whack job Tea Party.
No. No.
This is
interesting because the Republicans are considered... The Republicans used to be the party where everyone followed the leader. And the Democrats were sort of disorganized and wacky. And that's totally gone off the wheels, because the Democrats are now, like, totally falling in line behind Nancy Pelosi, and the Republicans can't get their shit together to save their lives.
Right.
But also, and we were going to talk about this later, but I think we should talk about it now. There was a survey done of 24 House Republican seats, and Republicans fell behind an unnamed Democratic rival in 17 of those districts. There are a bunch of seats in gerrymandered districts because, you know, one of the districts that was up for grabs is the district my parents live in. That's a gerrymandered district. There's no reason that district needs to be Republican, but it is solidly Republican. It was Kirsten Gillibrand's district before the redistricting, and she was the first Democrat to get elected there in a long time. But before that, they had a long history of very conservative leadership there. They now have Chris Gibson, who's very, you know, who's fairly conservative. That seat is up for grabs.
Right.
There are 17 seats up for grabs.
Yeah, Chris Gibson, didn't you say, is losing now to
He's
an unnamed
losing
Democrat.
Now to an unnamed Democrat. They don't, there are a couple of people that are sort of like contenders in the race, but this was just a poll about whether people would vote for him given the government shutdown at all. Or I think this maybe had even, you know, they maybe even asked them to consider aside from the government shutdown. The contenders include the owner of the New Republic and the husband of a Facebook co-founder, which is, like,
why not?
Random. But in any case, there are a bunch of these Republican districts, and a lot of them are in states where there's no danger of a Tea Party challenger. I've been saying this, you know, I've been talking about this nonstop with my parents, because my mom is, like, really on Chris Gibson on Facebook and whatever.
Sure,
she's, like, you know, harassing him up a storm. But there's no reason for him to go along with this plan. He might get primaried by the Tea Party, and maybe they would win, because you never know with primary voters.
Yeah.
There are some crazies in that district. But there's no Tea Partier on earth who would win the district.
Well, see, and that's
where his power comes in. Because he can be like, listen, guys, you guys want to vote for a Tea Partier, that's fine. But let's look at the demographics of this district. You aren't going to win this district.
Right.
We're giving it to the Democrats.
Right, exactly. And see, that's why, I mean, I feel like that could happen in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm obviously okay with that.
I'm okay with that.
I mean, I think that there are so many places where that the Democrats would probably be, but I mean, we saw this in Missouri.
This
last year. I mean, and Claire McCaskill knew it. She ran ads for Todd Akin, remember, when before he had won his primary at that point, because she wanted to run against him. This is what happens. So if they want to primary these moderate Republicans or even conservative Republicans who just aren't conservative enough for their likings, God bless them. Because it's a surefire way to lose control of the House, which they currently have.
They have literally, like, gerrymandered the House to never be a Democratic House again.
If they lose the House, it will be epic.
It will be epic because they caused it. Because it was their own creation of these crazy conservative districts.
It's not as if the Democrats just came out with so many good ideas and they took it back over.
No, I mean, they're not up to that. We're not claiming in any way that they're up to that at all. I will say that I've been very pleased by how strong they've been over this negotiation.
Me too.
Love to cave to a negotiation. It's one of their favorite tactics. And I think it's because, and I, you know, I've been talking about this all week. The Democrats have proven themselves to be unreliable negotiators. You can't negotiate in good faith with them because they don't deliver on their part of the bargain.
Yeah.
You know, they just take and take and take and take, and they don't give.
Right.
So there's no reason anymore, especially given this last sort of impasse. The Democrats now have no reason to ever negotiate with them again. And they have control of one house, so they might as well just tell them to go screw themselves.
And the problem is that, I mean, like, obviously, you know, we are Democrats, and we, you know, disagree with the Republicans on pretty much
everything.
But this is, like, such a prime example of seeing why, in a two-party system, the other party at least has to sort of, like, vaguely have its shit together.
Yeah.
Because even though we don't like the Republicans generally, if they were sort of, like, had anything going for themselves right now, the government wouldn't be shut down.
Exactly.
So you sort of, while, you know,
there's
you want to
strike... that we have checks and balances here. There's also a reason that we have sort of emergency procedures for allowing the minority a voice. This is what something like the filibuster was invented for.
Right.
It's not being used that way currently. It's just being used as an obstructionist tool.
Right.
But this is what, this is why that there are sort of systems in place for minorities to kind of do a no-holds-barred last-minute attempt to save the government. Because there are times that the majority goes crazy.
Right.
There, and this is why we have multiple houses, too.
Right,
I mean, this is why we have multiple branches. This is why Obama doesn't work for the same branch of government. This is why we don't have a parliamentary system where he's just the head of the parliament.
Yeah.
Because this is a time that you need both parties to be on their game.
Yes.
And currently, only one party is.
Yes.
And that party doesn't have the power to start the laws. It only has the power to end them.
Exactly.
So it's a problem. But that, with all of that said, there have been some hilarious things where, like, individual Republicans have been going on trying to act like they have nothing to do with the shutdown and deserve special treatment because they're so annoyed that the government is shut down, even though they caused it.
Right.
Daryl Issa, in particular, filed, like, a special motion to have one of his court cases related to the Fast and the Furious scandal, like, to continue despite the shutdown. And the judge was like, no.
No.
Like, don't be... It's like he's, like, obsessed with getting Eric Holder, and he couldn't let this little shutdown business get in the way of him getting Eric Holder.
Uh-uh.
But the judge basically said that she wasn't going to violate the shutdown because it was his own party that caused it. And then there was a congressperson from North Carolina, Renee Elmers, who... Stupid.
What a dumbass.
You know, she was talking... She was doing an interview with, I think, a local news station from her state, and a lot of congresspeople have vowed to give up their salaries during the shutdown because they still get paid, and everyone pretty much thinks that's
ridiculous. Some of them are
donating
them to charity or, you know.
Which is, like, a ridiculous thing because they should be the first people to lose their salary when the government shuts down.
Yeah.
But in any case, she's asked about that because a lot of her colleagues from North Carolina have given up their salaries, both sides of the aisle. And she said, "I understand that there may be some other members who are deferring their paychecks, and I think that's admirable. I'm not in that position. Because I make $174,000 a year, unlike my staff that's not getting paid, and they make, like, $23,000 a year, probably. Or, like, you know, under $30,000 a year.
Yeah.
Unlike the federal employees, all, you know, 3 million of them or whatever, who are having their pay deferred or who aren't even in work in the first place.
Right.
She needs her salary.
Yes.
The cafeteria workers that serve her lunch do not need their salaries.
Yes.
But she does. And there was even a Democrat who said something like that because he was like, well, it's not our fault.
Right.
But, you know, just don't say anything in that case.
I was going to say.
Like, don't be like, oh, yes, it's very admirable people are doing that. Pull a Ted Cruz and answer a different question.
Exactly.
But then there was this crazy video that went viral.
Oh, yeah. This was awesome.
That was awesome. Randy, is it Neugebauer?
I don't know. Because
he's got a crazy name.
He's a
representative
name.
From Texas. He's roughly 1 trillion
oh
years
my God.
Old or so.
He's so
And he was like, there's this video of him, like, harassing this Park Service employee who's guarding the World War II Veterans Monument and not letting anyone in because it's closed because the government is shut down.
Right.
And he has this weird conversation with her where he aggressively goes, how do you look at them and deny them access because there's a bunch of, like, vets wandering around not able to go in? And she was like, it's difficult. I'm sorry, sir. And he said, the Park Service should be ashamed of themselves. And she goes, I'm not ashamed. And he says, you should be. But, of course, it's his fucking fault that she can't let anyone in.
I know, but this is a whole thing. There's been a lot of photo ops with vets who have been trying to go to the monuments this week.
This is a PR strategy the GOP
Steve
is trying.
Steve King, Michelle Bachmann, they're all trying to... My aunt has been real into this on her Facebook page. And, like, it's just sort of... It's so crazy because, and the thing that they're going with is that it's Obama who's shutting these down, because, like, the administration is the one who's sort of, like, issuing the orders for sort of, like, who is, like, for what's getting shut down or whatever. So basically, they are being like, Obama said that this couldn't be opened, and it's just sort of like, well, but of course he did, because he's the one who is, I mean, it's his administration sort of is the one who has to execute the shutdown.
You're the one who didn't give him the budget to open it. You have the power to open it.
But they're saying that, right. But they did.
But they did.
Yeah.
Anyway, Joe Biden called the woman who was the parks ranger who got yelled at and told her he was proud of her.
Yeah.
Well, she handled it really well. I would have punched him in the face.
And there's somebody in the video who then sort of goes on to shout at him. And it's like, and you it's guys like, need to get your act together. He didn't. It was sort of a bipartisan shouting that he did, but which was sort of annoying because it was like, why can't, I think it was something along the, you know, why can't you guys work together? Yeah. And sort of like, well, it's...
That's not what's happening.
That's not what's happening. That's, yeah, exactly.
But in any case, so there's been a lot of sort of, you know...
But speaking of the parks, because I was telling you this over lunch... This doesn't just affect... I think what people forget is that this really does sort of like affect more people than people who are just working for the government.
Specifically in the case of the Parks Department, because those are public... You know,
right, exactly. And, you know, I was talking to my parents earlier this week, and my dad owns a small business where he takes people out in Arizona, like, into the desert and sort of, like, the state parks and stuff. And some of the state parks are still open in Arizona, but, like, he has to get to them. He has to go through BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, and that is closed.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's so many, like, ancillary... sort of Absolutely. Businesses who are being affected. So he's effectively, like, not able to take anybody on tours right now. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not his sole money-making venture, sort of. He's basically retired. But I mean, like,
no, but I
think
mean,
that it's just sort of an example of
he's a small businessman whose business has been affected by the shutdown.
Right. And so I think that we can't just only think of the federal employees who the Republicans love to hate on just because
they
work
But they've been trying
the
to
government.
Take away their health care for...
Right.
They want to get rid of their Cadillac plan.
But it's not... It's not just those people who are being affected here. I mean,
it has a
ripple effect.
Yeah, it has a much larger consequences than that.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the reasons no one can get anything done is because everyone in Congress is drunk right now and has been for like a week.
It's so funny.
As this bill, as you know, as the time was dwindling down to the last minutes on Monday night, there was like a smell of alcohol in the air. Like the alcohol... was, like, palpable.
Yeah, it's like,
well... Everyone was drunk.
They knew that they were going to have to go shut down the government. It's sort of like when you take a couple shots before you, like, go ask the hot girl or guy out at the bar, basically. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's like, you need sort of, like, that
they
liquid
need that
courage.
the last oomph.
Yeah.
And also the bartenders in D.C. have been saying that there's been, like, some really rowdy nights with furloughed staffers who don't have anywhere to go.
Well, right, and it's like, usually they have extra security on Friday nights because it's sort of like a bar and it's like hopping on Friday nights, but like now they have to have it every night because there's basically all
like
these people
Tuesday,
who don't they don't have to work the next day because they can't.
Yeah. In any case, what we're slowly counting down to is our next debt ceiling negotiation.
Quickly, now at this point, basically. It's like the 17th, basically, isn't it? I mean, it's
like
within the next couple weeks. Yeah.
And... the big sort of concern about, you know, when this government shutdown will resolve itself has a lot to do with what we're going to do about this debt ceiling negotiation.
Yeah.
There have been a bunch of Republicans who have said that they would like to reopen the government mostly so they can ask for concessions on the debt ceiling negotiation instead of on this CR bill. Possibly because that would have been a better strategy to begin with.
Well, that's what... so many Republicans are sort of angry that this Obamacare
that this
thing
came
got
up.
Tied to shutting down the government.
Right, because they know it has nothing to do with anything.
Doesn't have... right, exactly.
The debt ceiling negotiation is smarter because that's when the Social Security checks stop coming. But I think that they're foolish anyway because everyone knows it's their fault when we can't raise the debt ceiling. So it's not like it would be a mystery whose fault it was in that situation.
Right.
But... Boehner had said originally that he wasn't going to let the debt ceiling
Right, he wasn't going to let
pass.
Us default.
He wasn't going to let us default. He wasn't going to let the
Yeah, he
pass.
Was on record as saying that this week, as early as this
but
week.
But then he sort of, like, started hedging, because now he doesn't know what he's on the record as saying, because he can't be responsible for anything.
No.
Because he doesn't know what he's doing. He's lost.
No.
I've been saying all week...
Well, he probably said that, and then had... you know, a call from the Tea Party caucus.
And they were like, unsay that.
Exactly.
Never have said that.
So now he's just pretending like he didn't.
Yeah. I have been saying all week, and Obama is now following my advice, even though I said, I didn't really have a way to get my advice to him, but I'm hoping they're listening to our podcast, because we've been giving you possibly the best advice that's out there about how to proceed in this situation, that what Obama needs to do is, like, a really, like, personal attack campaign on Boehner.
Yeah.
Both sort of, like, we, you know, both behind closed doors, like, in meetings with GOP congressmen and in public, they need to make it clear that Boehner is not... is not capable of carrying out this leadership role.
Yeah.
They need to force a vote of confidence. They need to get somebody who's not scared of the Tea Party back in power. I think that if they could do that, the entire Republican Party would benefit. I think they probably know that. Because this is not like... You know who's going to end this for us is Wall Street. Because Wall Street is fucking pissed.
Yes.
And Wall Street is bankrolling them. Wall Street is not bankrolling the Tea Party is the problem.
Right.
So they have these crazy people who are being bankrolled by like the Koch brothers and some rando rich people. Who don't really have to answer for any sort of sense of reason. The rest of the GOP is there to make Wall Street money. So right. if they're not succeeding at doing that because the government is closed right. and they can't deregulate financial markets anymore.
And Wall Street, then, Wall Street panicked the last time we had this debt ceiling thing, which didn't even just at the panic leading up to the debt ceiling, they panicked.
Exactly.
And we didn't actually default. We've never defaulted.
No.
But I mean, the worldwide markets panicked when this was going to happen. And our credit rating got downgraded when this happened, too. And that was before we even defaulted. We didn't default.
No.
And now we're talking about, like, maybe we will. That's a shitstorm.
This is... I am shocked by how serious shit has gotten.
I know.
Because I sort of lay the blame pretty squarely on Boehner personally, because he's really the one person who's uniquely positioned to solve this. He would maybe have to sacrifice himself. But if he really is patriotic enough to be a loyal civil servant,
he should
got himself into this position.
Right. He either has to stand up to them and get something done.
Or he needs to go away.
Yep.
There's no other option at this point.
No.
And he doesn't have the power to stand up for them. I would like to see someone like Peter King take his position. Like, someone who really doesn't have much to fear personally from the Tea Party. And, someone who's got conservative chops. Peter King is always supporting some nonsense.
Yeah, of course.
You know, he's not a nice guy.
Well, and he's been around forever, too.
He's been around forever. I want to see, like, a real old insider who, you know, I know they don't really have a playbook for dealing with these crazies who are just, like, kamikaze pilots, basically.
Right.
I mean, I think even Peter King said that he knows that they're being called the kamikaze party.
Right, and somebody called them the suicide caucus, too, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's been going around. The suicide caucus term has been going around. I mean, and that's what they are. Someone who's not personally scared of them needs to take Boehner's position. And someone who is sort of, like, established enough to just be like, kids, settle down.
Yeah.
It's kids. They're kids. They're children. It's children that are doing this.
They're newbies.
It's like they have these, like, bratty younger siblings who came in and, like, want everything.
Yeah.
Because they're spoiled.
Right.
By the way, if you think that it's only children who are super spoiled, you've not considered the spoiling that goes on with younger siblings. Younger siblings are the most spoiled.
Probably.
I once lived in a house in college with five people. Mm-hmm. Two of us were only children, and then two of us were older siblings, and one of us was a younger sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And the younger sibling caused more shit than any other person in the house. The older siblings always tried to kind of calm everything down. The younger sibling would always try to cause shit with the only children. And the only children would be like, well, we're not going to take your shit. Like, who the fuck are you? And so, you know, it was like a war all the time. But it was because of this younger sibling stirring up shit. Mm-hmm. Younger siblings are stirring up shit.
I believe that.
And these are the younger siblings of the house. They sort of aren't acting like adults.
Yeah.
But so I think that Boehner is what needs to go. I think that's what needs to happen. I don't see any other avenue for
for
getting rid of this. And I am hoping... Well, I was telling Brent that I had an idea about a GOP buddy system where Democrats could each take a GOP congressperson under their wing and just sort of, like, show them the way of the world. Like, you know, someone could take someone like Chris Gibson, who's going to maybe lose his next election, over this.
Right.
And be like, listen, Chris, I know you're worried about the Tea Party. I get it. I do.
Yeah.
But we're raising a shit ton of money off of this, and your district is up for grabs. So why don't you worry about us instead?
Right.
Why aren't you worrying that your district is like literally starting to hate you because of this?
Yeah.
And think to yourself, you know what? Screw the GOP. You guys are being crazy.
Yeah.
Come along with the group.
Yeah. Well, and it's just so crazy. Like, obviously, they haven't learned from history either, because...
Well, they don't know it. They have a different history.
They have a different history, I know. But, I mean, the government shutdown that happened sort of, like, over 95 and 96 was one of the only reasons that Bill Clinton was reelected.
Yeah.
He was in the tank when Gingrich shut down the government.
Yeah.
And
it was like, he was in the tank because everyone thought that he was untrustworthy. And then... the GOP came and, like, shut down the government, and everyone was like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Who's untrustworthy here? Like, that's what's happened here. You know, the Republicans normally have a really effective PR machine that somehow manages to make things disappear for them that make them look bad and make sort of, like, people think things that aren't true about, you know, whatever they're up to. This, it's failing right now.
Yeah.
Because they have stepped so far out of the boundaries of explanation.
Yeah.
That there's not even anything to, there's no one to explain what's, there's no way to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
In a way that makes people think
well,
that.
Well, and I think they, even the, I think even the press is catching on because we actually posted something earlier in the week.
And that was the most shares of anything that we've ever posted
on our website. And it was a great story. It was from Al Jazeera American. It was talking about how, like, the press was sort of failing in its coverage of this in their attempt to sort of, like, be fair and balanced when there is nothing to be
there's
fair
only
and balanced
one position here.
About,
there's
and it's that the Republicans
right
have shut down the government.
Yeah.
So, and I think that it's sort of catching up a little bit. I mean, they sort of, I get why they're thinking that they need to sort of, like, toe the line, but I mean, I think that the press coverage has been a little harder on the Republicans than it sometimes
And it's gotten
is.
Slowly, you know, it's got, the language has gotten slowly a little more critical of their position and has stopped making it sound so reasonable.
Right.
It doesn't sound reasonable anymore.
No, it doesn't.
They don't, there's no way to make this kind of crazy sound reasonable.
No.
So no one's doing it. Meanwhile, Chuck Hagel, you know, they passed a bill that would allow the military to continue to get paid during all of this, and Chuck Hagel decided that that applied to everyone who works for the Defense Department. So he called back all of the furloughed defense employees, like the civilian defense employees,
right.
And basically was like, well, I'm just interpreting that law liberally.
Yep.
So,
come on back.
And the House just passed a bill that would make sure that people get back pay for this time, which, of course, they have to. Like, don't not do that.
Right.
But, because that's some of, what's so funny, and what I think was so sort of, like, ineffective about the initial press strategy the Democrats were using is it was all about these federal employees not being paid. Not realizing that Republicans don't want us to have
federal
employees.
Exactly, I know.
So, like, showing us that they're not getting paid just made them think we were saving money somehow.
Right, exactly.
They didn't think about functions of government that needed to continue.
No.
Like, that didn't occur to them.
No.
So that was, and we even saw some federal agencies refuse the bill. You know, the Republicans had been attempting this sort of, like, piecemeal strategy where they would put bills forward that were like, we'll fund the WIC program and nothing else for blah, blah, blah. And suddenly they were, like, really into welfare programs because they were trying to look less like assholes.
Yeah.
And the Democrats were like, no, we're not going to take piecemeal funding. And this was a strategy to make the Democrats look like they were rejecting something, you know,
and it didn't
funding
work.
For babies. And it didn't work. The head of WIC came out and was like, we don't want you to fund us with a piecemeal bill. It's really cynical of you to use poor mothers and children as, you know, some sort of PR strategy for yourselves.
Yeah.
Because you've never shown an interest in funding us before, so why start now?
Yeah, screw
like, it
off.
Was genius.
Yeah.
Because even these the heads of these federal programs have suddenly politicized because the Republicans are using them so cynically.
Yeah.
In good news.
Yes. Well, and also ironic news,
and
too.
And ironic
because,
news.
Because the whole reason that this that we're in this sort of, like, debacle that we're in right now is because the Republicans want to shut down Obamacare, and...
Well, but I think, to be fair, what they have made clear is that Obamacare was just the idea that they had of something to shut down. They don't actually care much about Obamacare. It's a symbol.
Sure.
You know? Like,
true.
Finally we're seeing them admit that they don't give a shit about Obamacare. They just want something. They
well,
don't know what it is.
Yes.
But they want something.
They initially wanted Obamacare.
They initially wanted Obamacare.
And I think they still do want Obamacare.
But I think
obviously.
It's for symbolic reasons only. They don't,
it is.
They don't actually care about Obamacare functioning. It's making business money.
Right.
They, it was their idea. So of course they don't care. Moderate Republicans don't ultimately care.
Right.
It's been this like symbolic thing that's been, because it's the only effective thing that Obama's done, and they just want to like rob him of that.
Right.
But
it started.
But it started. And it's
whether
going
they
well.
Like it or not. Yes.
The exchanges opened, and shit was awesome. Yeah. Me and Brent went onto the exchange website in California, got some of our friends cheaper rates on their health insurance, found, you know, some interesting facts about how much more affordable health insurance would be for people like us if we were to lose our jobs or something like that. Especially for people like me who, when I last tried to change health insurance, got rejected from every plan I applied to.
Right.
Like, literally rejected. Like, I was just told I couldn't have health insurance.
Yep.
Because I was unhealthy.
Yeah.
Well, so the very people that need health insurance were not able to get it until until this week.
Yeah. And, you know, there were a lot of problems with the national site, with the healthcare.gov.
Possibly because the government was not open, among other things.
Right. And possibly because they sort of, like, weren't prepared for the amount of traffic they were going to get,
which
I would say
crazy.
Is silly, because if you're trying to give...
It's the most exciting thing that's happened this year.
Right, and also, it's sort of like, you know, if you're, if the reason that Obamacare was passed is because it needs to ensure like 30-some million people or however many, 100 million people,
like,
I don't
sure
even
your
remember,
website can handle, 30 can handle, million
can handle that many people trying to come and get the product that you're trying to sell to them that they all need so they don't die.
Right.
I mean, like, so that was a little frustrating, but that was like the federal exchange sort of site.
And the exchanges, like, are being operated by the states. So
right,
each state site...
Most of the state sites were okay. Some of them were also having some issues too. But also you have until March to sign up. So obviously there was sort of on day one and even day two, like, you were going to have problems. Like that was going to happen.
It's a new thing.
And it sucks.
But
the California one was working like...
Working like a charm. Yep. Its level of awesomeness was high.
Yeah. It, well, and the guy who sort of, like, is running the California one was sort of, like, interviewed about, like, all the problems or whatever, and he was like, we didn't have any problems reported in California. It's like, our call centers were working, our, like...
Yeah.
Just
And this
worked.
Is from California, where... I used to be on unemployment in California, and in order to call unemployment, you would go to an unemployment call center, and everyone would just sit there for hours trying to dial unemployment, and the first person to get a person on the phone would just pass it around to everyone in the office, because it was so hard to get anyone from the state on the phone about anything.
Right. But we have said this numerous times over
now
the years.
Now we
like,
can answer the phone here.
But once you... Yeah, exactly. But once you sort of... Once you're living in a state that sort of cared to implement this law,
right.
your
works.
Exchange probably ran better. Yeah. And that's what, you know, if you're living in a state who are like, who is upset with the federal government that the, you know, healthcare.gov wasn't working, then you should really probably be upset with your state that they didn't bother to run an exchange.
Well, and investors seem to think this is a good idea because shares for hospitals and for health insurance companies went up.
And this is going really underreported because this is a thing that you and I have been saying and most Democrats have been saying.
And
that
anyone
who are mad
ever...
about this is that this is just a giveaway
to insurance companies.
Insurance companies. And, you
and
know,
even, you know, for healthcare providers who are going to have this new influx of patients.
Right. It should be no surprise that their stocks soared after they found out that the whole world
was
going to
be required to buy their...
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and after the interest, too. I mean...
Yeah.
It,
yeah. People were into it.
Yeah.
People were signing onto the internet to get health insurance the moment they could.
Right. And we were also hearing a lot of great stories, some of which we posted
were,
this week, about, like, you know,
they were
Republicans. Republicans who realized when they were going to be able to save thousands of dollars on their health insurance every month that they were sort of, like, real into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shocking.
What a surprise. and, you know... This is why there was so much... This is why they attached Obamacare to the CR instead of to the debt ceiling.
Right.
Yes. Is because this was going to happen.
Yes.
I'm hoping... I have a hope. I'm going to share it with you.
Please.
I'm hoping that if the Democrats do end up negotiating away the mandate for any period of time, that things are now far enough along in some of these big states that they keep their own mandates.
Right,
I'm
because
hoping,
there are states that have mandates.
Here's
all right,
what I
mean,
don't
Massachusetts
care about.
Has its mandates.
Yeah,
had
exactly.
it forever. Had it
here's, and these exchanges are being run by the states anyway, so your rates are state-dependent. They're not federally dependent.
Right.
I am hoping, because I don't care about these states that voted against Obamacare and don't want it. If they don't want health care, I don't care. They, you know, they can do whatever they want.
Right.
I want California to have a mandate. I want New York State to have a mandate.
Right.
I want states that I might live in to have a mandate.
Right, because living in California, if the federal government pushes off the mandate, which I hope that they won't do, because that will obviously be them caving to something that they shouldn't have.
Right. I mean,
but
they
I
better
mean,
not.
California can, it's like you said,
there's 52 million people here. We can do whatever we want.
We're running our own exchanges. The insurance companies that we are buying from are sort of like, you know, they're state-based exchanges.
Yeah.
Those are rates that would stay the same if California just decided to say that we were going to have our own mandate.
Exactly.
And we probably would, because we control the world
I was
going to
say,
so.
If this has been really popular in California. It's been really successful. It wasn't successful in states that didn't want it to be successful, because they were purposely making it unsuccessful.
Right.
But if it's been this successful, there's no reason to not keep a mandate here. I think we should assume there's a mandate in California, and if the government, if the federal government can't get it together, we should have our own, because it'll make sure that the rates stay cheap, and it turns out people in California are sort of into it.
Yeah.
And I think the same is true of New York State. You know, in New York State, the rates... New York State actually, I think, needs the mandate specifically because the rates really weren't as low as they should have been in New York State. Health insurance was already much more expensive there. They already had laws that required you to cover people with pre-existing conditions and said that you couldn't charge them more money. So because of that, their rates didn't go down as much as they did here, because here you could just flat out reject anyone you wanted for any reason that you felt like. Or you could charge them $1 million a month if you wanted to.
Right.
I'm hoping that if New York, that over time, because there's a mandate, the rates in New York State will have to go down because people just won't be able to afford the coverage otherwise.
Right.
So I'm hoping that they keep a mandate for demand reasons.
Right.
Because then the demand will bring it down. But things are going smashingly on the Obamacare front.
Yep.
Things are... I had an interesting conversation with someone at work who is normally a little bit more fiscally conservative than I am and was furious about the mandate. And I was like, well, what would you do instead? And she was like, I would have a single-payer system.
That's awesome.
So I'm hoping that half the people that are furious about the mandate really are furious that we don't have single-payer health care.
Well, actually, and that is, I heard this
on... I think that's underreported, too.
Well, it is. And actually, there was a... I was watching Real Time with Bill Maher this week, and there is this poll that people have been sort of, like, you know, carting out, that there's, like, 54% of people, like, don't want Obamacare repealed. But of those other 46% of people...
Quick math.
The 16% of those people do want it repealed, but that's because they want it repealed for a single-payer system. Yeah. So there's actually less
there's
people.
There's more support for people having health care.
Much, much more support. Yeah. There's more like 70%, 75% for people wanting health care.
Yeah, and the people that voted, you know, that say that they don't want Obamacare or single-payer probably don't know what it is, because Jimmy Kimmel had this genius moment on the television and internet this week where he went out and interviewed people and asked them whether they preferred Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
And everybody wanted the Affordable Care Act. No one wanted Obamacare
because
they hate that mandate.
Nope.
And when he said, what do you like about the Affordable Care Act? They all said, well, it's affordable.
It's affordable.
So here, I have a suggestion to make for us. I've a new rule that we're going to employ.
Right.
We're never going to say Obamacare ever again.
Right.
We're going to only... I know... I've been trying, and I think Brent's been trying, to take back Obamacare the way that you can take back... Like, the way that queer got taken back.
Yes, exactly.
I wanted to take back Obamacare and make it a good thing. It's not working. Well, I'm willing to admit defeat. The ACA is what we're calling it from now on. We should never say Obamacare.
And I was sort of always willing to say Obamacare as sort of like the just generic term for the law. But it was always... upsetting to me. I was seeing people this week on Facebook talking about how they had signed up for Obamacare. It's like, no, you signed up for Blue Cross.
Yeah.
Or HealthNet, or whatever terrible insurance company you signed up for. You didn't sign up for Obamacare.
No. The government's not providing you healthcare.
There isn't Obamacare to sign up for.
No, me and Bren have said repeatedly that if there was, we would be the first people to sign up for it.
Exactly.
If we had Obamacare right now, I guarantee that we'd both have better healthcare.
Probably, yes.
If that was a thing that we could have.
Right.
Because that would be a public option.
Yes,
and that's
it
what
would.
We're looking for.
Right.
But I also this what you just said, and this also made me think that they really were foolish to give up the public option, because I bet Obamacare would have 70% approval ratings
probably
if there was a public option.
Right.
I mean, I think the approval ratings would be massively higher.
Yeah.
If there was a public option, they should never have. I mean, I understand why they did it, sort of in the strategic sense.
Sure.
But they've got to figure out a way to get that on board, because I think that a lot of people who are just angry about the mandate would be less angry if they could just sign up for government health care.
Yeah, I do too.
in any case, it was a wild week anyway in the Capitol.
I know. If those were the only things that had happened with
would
Obamacare starting
crazy.
And government shutting down, like, that's crazy enough. But then there were some other just like completely unrelated bonkersness.
A crazy car chase. Which, by the way, while this was happening, me and Brent were trying to figure out what was going on. And I was like, and he finally said it was a car chase. And I was like, call Jill immediately.
I know.
Jill knew all the details.
Yeah.
Our friend Jill, who's been on the podcast, is like a car chase expert.
She knows all the terms for like the maneuvers that people are making.
Well, she learned those is from the California local news, because
there's always a car chase.
There's always a car chase going on here.
And they're always like really slow car chases too.
They're like 30 mile an hour car chases.
Yeah.
And the anchors are always like, they're trying the banking maneuver right now. Like they have they know all the names of all the police maneuvers that they use.
Yeah.
And they like all know all these technical details about what cars do when they're bumped and like all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah.
When you see a car chase going on in New York City, the anchors are like, well, it looks like the police are trying to get closer. Now they're farther away again. Like, it's like very vague descriptions of what's going on.
Right.
Here, they know all the
police maneuvers.
It's
like a play-by-play. There's
like, it's like
they
a sport.
Get the telestrator out and like the...
And they have all this special news equipment that's there just to follow car chases.
Totally.
They have helicopters that are on the scene that are expert car chase following helicopters.
Yeah.
They have like news vans that like know how to drive in a car chase. Like, a lot of random shit goes on when car chases are happening here.
But this one started at the White House.
Right.
This woman was driving. She had a kid in the car, which the police did not know at the time. The child ended up being okay, thank God.
Right, yeah.
But she ran into a barricade or something at the White House, and then sort of, like, drove away, like, sped off, like, 2 miles away to the Capitol building, and was sort of chased there, and then ultimately shot and killed once she got to the Capitol. But, I mean, it was like, nobody knew what was going on at the time, and there were just guns fired, and it was at the Capitol, so...
There were police that were injured, furloughed police that were injured, so it didn't make the shutdown look awesome, because... No. The sort of main point that the news did not forget to report, thankfully, was that none of those police were being paid for their work.
Right.
But also, this woman, like, was schizophrenic, I think. But she had, like, told the police in December that she was, like, a prophet and that Obama put her under surveillance or something.
Right, she thought that Obama was stalking her, basically, which...
Can he stalk me? Like, I have thoughts for him.
I know.
I'm sharing them all the time. If he was stalking me, he would be getting my advice quicker than he's currently getting it. I know. So,
which is not at all a problem.
Which is not at all.
Yeah.
But his staff's been thinking of the same things I have, because he has been going after Boehner, just like I said he should. As soon as I said that, he started doing it.
You put it out into the world.
I put it out into the
world. The universe took it.
I secreted it.
That's right. That's, you'd use the secret, which you're a big fan of, I know,
all
the time.
Yes, yes. Lots of secreting going on with me. But then, if that wasn't enough... Some guy set himself on fire in the National Mall, as if we were in Tibet and we're having, like, a monk protest.
I know. And nobody knows what that was about.
No one knows
he just doused himself in gasoline and then just
set himself on fire. He set up a camera, but no one knows if he was filming himself. Like,
right. Like, there was an eyewitness who was like, I didn't hear him say anything. Yeah. And there was, like...
He died, too, so we'll never know.
And there were no signs. I guess, like, the police said that, like, you know, he didn't, like, leave notes, it doesn't sound like, or, you know,
anything.
No,
he was just a guy setting himself on fire.
Sure.
Just doing it.
Yep.
Which is not something that happens usually, and certainly is crazy that he is doing it. Like, maybe it was about the government shutdown, but, like, that just adds an extra funny farm element to what's going on in the Capitol
right now.
Like, everyone in Congress is drunk. There's car chases happening at the White House, like, to the Capitol. There's a guy setting himself on fire. Like, what is not happening over there?
I know. Seriously.
It's
the government being funded.
The government,
that's what.
Most of what should be going on is not happening there.
It's everything else that's happening.
Yeah. Well, it goes to show you that if you shut down the government, you've opened a door to crazy that you can't close again.
I know. It's Pandora's box.
Pandora's box of crazy just comes out. Meanwhile, though, in other, in exciting news, not other exciting, that wasn't exciting news at all. That was terrifying news. Wendy Davis officially announced it's happening.
Yes.
I know you read somewhere... that there are Democrats that are questioning whether this is a good thing because they don't really want to put all this money into a losing race.
I did, which, I mean, I sort of get. It's 2014, I think, you know, we were just talking about all of these
House races
that could be winnable. And we talked last week when we sort of figured that she was going to be announcing this, because last week she had said that she had an announcement and everybody figured that it was going
to be
her announcement.
We knew this was
happening. Right, and so there are a lot of people who are sort of like, everybody sort of assumes that she will lose.
Right.
And... there's going to probably still be a lot of money put into that race by, you know, national Democrats and also probably, you know, Texas Democrats. And that's money that usually would go elsewhere. And because nobody bothers with the Republican or with the Texas governor's race because, like, what Democrat is ever going to win that? So, I mean, who knows? Maybe she...
Well, any Democrat that existed in the 90s
They've had Democratic governors before. But who knows? You know, maybe she will win and it will have been, you know, for the good. But, I mean, it's an interesting theory.
I just thought it was... something to say about it, which is that, the Republicans have been notoriously bad with their long game recently.
Yes.
The Democrats have been a lot better, but they're never that great with their long game because they love to give everything away.
Right.
This is, I think, a long game move where she may not win, and that's fine, but the long game is that Texas is going to go blue at some point, and this is a step towards that goal.
Yes.
And the long game gives us the presidency for all of time. So,
and I agree with that.
And so I don't think that it's a bad idea to put money into this race. I hope that we can put money into these House... You know, I think the House races are a bigger priority, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think there's probably, at this point, enough money to go around. They're raising so much fucking money off of this government shutdown that they probably don't
even know what to do. Her.
Yeah, they don't even know what to do with it all.
Right.
I mean, they're raising a ton of money off of this.
Yeah.
So I think there will be the money for a 2014 governor's race in Texas.
Sure.
I think that it's a smart strategy for in terms of the long game, because I think that that's a state that we want to get.
Well, and
I think that anytime an opportunity like this comes up in a state that that might go blue, a state that's about to enter that territory, we should just go for it.
Well, and when you have a high profile candidate and a candidate who's qualified too, and she's got a great story, there's no reason for her to not run just because people are scared that she's going to siphon off money, and that doesn't make any sense.
No, that's crazy.
So
this is a unique opportunity because you're not going to have a 13-hour filibuster over women's right to choose every day in Texas.
Yeah.
You're not going to have a woman who's got such a, like, perfect backstory, who's attained this kind of national attention, who is this high profile, to run as a Democrat in Texas. You're not going to have that.
No.
If this had happened somewhere in Arizona, that would be another time to just put some money into the race, because Arizona's going to go blue.
Close.
It's close. Texas is close. Texas has gone blue before. They don't usually go blue for the presidency, but in this kind of crazy, in this era of crazy, I don't see why they couldn't. I just feel like, you know, it's like when Howard Dean came up with the 50-state strategy.
Yes.
That was a great moment for America.
When it worked.
And it worked. That should be their strategy every time. I don't know why they don't do that. But that was sort of this groundbreaking moment where someone had the foresight to be like, you know what?
We can
create voters in any district.
Yeah.
Because there are more Democrats than Republicans, period.
Yeah, always.
So there are more there's always voters. My mom actually came up with another really genius strategy. And she sometimes says crazy, sometimes some of her strategies are sort of off the wall. And so I didn't really fully grapple with what she was saying while she was saying it. And I was like, oh yeah, good idea. Great. But she was like, you know what we should do is we should have incentive-based voting where districts that get big voter turnout improvements get federal funding for projects in the district. And I was like, yeah, great, good thinking, Mom. And then I was like, later, after I was off the phone with her, I was like, that's genius. That's fucking genius. Because Democrats have the voters everywhere. They don't have these there are all these gerrymandered districts where the Democrats don't get the votes. But it's sort of like statistically proven that the more people that vote, the more people vote Democratic.
Always.
You know, there are more Democrats out there. There are more opportunities for Democrats in a world in which everyone votes.
Right.
So
we always win.
They don't lose anything from this strategy.
Right.
Because even in a Tea Party district, the more people that vote, the more Democratic votes exist.
Yeah.
So I don't even think that this is a strategy that would need to be targeted at districts that they thought could go blue. This could just go for anyone. I think that...
Yeah.
This is like this Wendy Davis thing.
Yeah.
You sort of like put all your shit that, because the Democrats, unlike the Republicans, gain from a broad strategy.
Yeah.
The Republicans don't gain from broad politics because they have such hateful, horrible views that they they can only kind of target these narrow-minded, little enclaves.
Yeah.
But the Democrats,
they
at
can
this
go
point,
anywhere.
Because they're the only people representing anyone.
Right.
They're essentially just moderate Republicans at this point. Like there's no other party to vote for anymore. So they could just be winning everything.
Yeah. Last thing before we move on, just in regards to Wendy Davis, I thought it was interesting because, we've been talking a lot about the, potential presidential contenders in 2016. And we've been talking a lot about sort of like this populist message that we think is going to be sort of like the winning message sort of moving forward. Bill de Blasio used it to blow everybody out of the water. Also, he's like ahead by like 1,000% in like all the
50%.
Polls. 50%. Like, that's not even going to be
close. That's not a race
so
anymore.
So screw
that's just
all
the guy who
Christine
won.
Quinn's people who said that a vote for de Blasio
was
going to be a vote. Anyway, but Wendy Davis is smart enough to recognize this because it's a plan that she's apparently going to be going with. The AP referenced her populist message, and she had a good quote where she said, "It's time for a governor who believes that you don't have to buy a place in Texas's future. It's time for a governor who believes that the future of Texas belongs to all of us."
Yeah.
So she didn't go quite as far as talking about sort of like income inequality and stuff like that.
No, but for Texas, that's pretty far.
That's far. And she may get there, too. I mean, this was just sort of like her initial speech where she announced her candidacy. But like the fact that she is sort of like, A, smart enough to see it, and B, sort of like, I mean, realizes that this is the way to go, I mean, I think is just sort of further proof that A, we're right about this, and B, Hillary Clinton is screwed.
Exactly.
To go off on a completely random tangent.
It's not random.
But I mean, it's not
this
random.
This is ultimately where our message, P.S., my mom is on the Nation Cruise, and she's there's so much inevitable Hillary talk going on there. And I was like, on the Nation Cruise?
Of all people.
The editor-in-chief is going on about the fucking Hillary inevitableness. Like,
she shouldn't
fall
be
in a well,
that.
Too. But this is why I've always been... This is why I always come back to Mike Huckabee's candidacy for president.
I know. I do, too.
And that's why me and Brent talk about that so much, because that was sort of a failed random bid for, the presidency. But it showed that there is this weird populist strain within really narrow-minded conservative thinking that...
Right.
Where they're voting on their lifestyle issues. They don't really know anything about the economy. They're voting because they hate abortions and gays, and that's fine.
Right.
But unlike the economy, abortions and gays don't really affect them. So if someone can if someone can offer a message that really resonates with the type of people that are only voting for the Republicans over bizarre ideological issues, I don't think it necessarily gets them votes in the short term. But I think it changes the language of politics, because those messages will resonate with regular people who are voting Republican.
Right.
And
well, that's why I think
there's room for that message in both parties.
Right.
And it's like me and Brent always say, the presidency will be won by the person that can bring, that can get that message to resonate with everyone.
I totally agree.
It's not going to be won by someone who, you know, throws her own party under the bus to get the votes of the swing voters in
right.
the middle. And that's, I mean, that's why we've been saying that, you know, a Hillary presidency isn't a good idea. And that's why we've been saying that populist messaging is smart. And that's why we're so proud of Bill de Blasio for recognizing that.
Right.
And, but I mean, this is going to be
and
a good test of our...
And of ourselves
for knowing it. Exactly. But this is why this Wendy Davis candidacy is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Because if she can get that message to resonate with some unexpected people, I'm thinking specifically conservative women.
I think so, too. Absolutely. And she's got a great story that I feel like will appeal to conservative women
mm-hmm.
as well. I mean, she lived in a trailer yep. for a while. She sort of, like, was raised by a single mother. She was, I think, wasn't she herself a single mother
at one point? I think so.
Maybe not. I don't know. I'm making things up now.
It touches
on
all
good,
the
high points. She's got a story that seems like
story.
Could... with the right messaging, speak to people who have either voted Republican in the past or just plain old not voted in the past.
Yeah.
I think that there could be...
Yes.
I think she can find new voters.
Exactly. So, that's about as exciting as things get
yep.
in Texas.
It is.
We have some international news that's sort of random.
It's
but
a little random, but they were... It was sort like of like breaking news as
yeah.
of this morning, basically, because we got some sort of like big Al-Qaeda terrorist.
Well,
and
it
we
was SEAL Team
Libya.
6, which is
well,
the,
no, SEAL Team 6 sort of was on the... failed mission.
Oh, they were on the failed mission.
Yeah. They were the ones who ran into the sort of firefight in Somalia because
oh,
we went on a couple like
we,
big
yeah, we
raids.
Were having a big week for
randomly basically
for
they
government
were,
shutdowns they were, and for terrorist raiding.
I know. And we caught some Al-Qaeda leader in Libya.
Right.
And who was sort of like supposedly responsible for or at least involved in the bombings
like
of
15 years
one
ago
of our embassies.
Somalia,
yeah,
a
while
like
ago.
That.
And then but we tried right. to get somebody who was responsible for the Nairobi mall attacks.
Right. And that was a Somali terror group that was affiliated with Al-Qaeda.
Right. And the SEAL Team 6 went on that and I guess ran into some they said ran into a lot more
resistance
than they did when they went to go get Osama bin Laden,
right,
which is sort of like
really
well,
concerning.
Okay, I know. I mean, that guy is really concerned
yeah,
about
exactly
getting caught.
Yeah, he was
rightly
specifically
so,
known
guess,
to be
but...
our enemy number one. So,
right. so that...
if he didn't even bother to hire as much security as these
right.
guys, then that's problematic.
Right. Anyway, so that one failed, but that was some terrorist news.
Some terrorist...
So, I guess some
mixed so things
bag
are happening internationally
yeah.
by our armed forces, who are the only people working for the government being paid besides
right.
Congress.
Exactly.
Meanwhile. In Funny Farm news,
yeah,
there's been a lot of ire over time
yes.
about the Redskins, which is
right.
a sports team that I, what team, what sport are they?
It's
are they football?
Football?
That's
what
it's I thought.
NFL.
I yeah. almost said that they were football, and then I was like, but what if they're baseball? And I just didn't know about
well,
it.
Well, there's baseball teams who have sort of like had the same issue
well, like
because
the
there's
Braves
the Atlanta Braves
and
the Cleveland Indians
and
the,
yeah.
right. But specifically, I think also just because it's in Washington, so I think there's just sort of like a
right.
certain element of like. Why can't the nation's capital, like, not have a sports team, like, that is, you
exactly.
know, offensive to...
Wait, isn't their baseball team called, like, the Senators or the Patriots or
the
something
Capitals.
Like that? The Capitals, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Obama apparently weighed in.
He did.
Did he not?
He said that he felt like he would maybe think about changing it, which the owner has said that he's not going to change it. And I think Obama's specific quote was, like, I think the, you know... changing it sort of, like, outweighs the ideal that, you know, people sort of, like, have an attachment
right, the
to the... And, you know, there have been other teams who have changed it. A lot of college teams
yes.
have changed their names. Some of them to, like, some odd ones, I think. There is...
Oh, yeah. Because St. John's changed their name from the Redmen to the Red Storm,
which is, like,
doesn't seem less offensive.
It doesn't... no, but also, like, Marquette is now the Golden Eagles.
Right. Instead
which
of
is
the
sort
Warriors.
Of, like, odd.
I would also argue that Warriors is maybe not the problem there. Like, I'm sure that they
no.
had an icon, a logo,
it was
or mascot
a logo. Yeah,
that
exactly.
was in,
That's
inappropriate,
what it
was. But change your mascot.
Change
to
the mascot.
Make
I
it
know.
A Viking, and then you're all
yeah,
set.
Exactly.
People aren't offended when
and,
you
And Stanford, I didn't realize this, because Stanford has been the Cardinal for as long as I can remember, but they apparently used to be the Indians, and they changed the Cardinal. Also, their mascot is a tree. So,
that's got nothing to do with anything.
An issue.
That's, there's
but,
nothing... I don't know why peg legs are not a more...
Oh, that's right. That was your high school mascot, right?
My high school football team's mascot was the peg leg.
Right.
I don't know why that's not a more popular one.
What was your college?
The Brewers.
Oh, the Brewers. Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, because Matthew Vassar was a brewer.
Oh, got it. Okay.
He thought he figured if women's education didn't take off, he would turn the campus into a brewery.
See, my college team was the Hawkeyes.
Right.
Which is like Hawkeye.
Why is the eye of a hawk so powerful? Yeah. Why is that such an important...
Now, my middle school was the Trojans, and they changed to the Bulldogs at one point over the sort of like condom
of the condom
sort of
situation. I would imagine.
Going on. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't really worry about offending actual Trojans.
No.
I mean,
no.
You know, they.
You just worry about middle schoolers.
You worry about middle schoolers making jokes
about condoms.
What is referred to in middle school as it?
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
I was thinking about that the other day as I was reading some script that was sort of overdoing the graphic genitalia references, and I was like thinking about how in middle school you couldn't even say the word sex, you just called it it.
It.
And you just made a lot of jokes about it.
It. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I like that.
And in final news.
Boy.
The world's worst combination of things happened. This is worse than the government shutdown, for sure.
Right, I'm surprised that, like, there wasn't a rip in the universe when this happened, basically, because the Romneys were on the Rachel Ray Show.
Oh, my God.
As you know, Lyle and I watch a lot of the Food Network. Right. I watch
more
than I'm comfortable with. I actually watched an episode of Mystery Diners that was awesome this week, because it had drag queens on it.
Yeah.
There was, like, a drag queen sting operation.
You gave me, like, a play-by-play of the episode after
it was crazy.
I've
never seen Mystery Diners, because I've always thought it was too stupid, but I landed on the Food Network, and there were, like, drag queens milling about some, like, dive bar, and I was like, well, obviously, I have to see what's going on here, and then I just got roped into it, and it was upsetting, but it was also sort of hilarious. But Rachel Ray is one of the most annoying people on Earth.
Mm-hmm. True story.
Few people. Her voice is terrible. Her recipes
her
are all upsetting. The fact that she has a talk show is potentially the most upsetting about all of the things that I just said were upsetting about her. And, I mean, we don't have to say how we feel about the Romneys.
No.
So, anyway, Anne is hawking her dumb cookbook. And so they were on and made a special recipe. And we talked about some of the recipes that were in there. And some of them were crazy, like skillet cookies and some meatloaf cup or something. Like, I don't know.
Some things from her Irish ancestors that sounded suspect. Everything
sounded like it was terrible. And what they made on the Rachel Ray Show didn't sound less terrible, because it was called Anne's Sweet Pork Burritos with the special ingredient Dr. Pepper.
Well, that would add sweetness. That would add some corn syrup to your burritos.
Now, I'm a big proponent of... I can't
knock
her too
much. I was going to say, the only time that I've seen anyone cook with soda is at your parents' house.
Yeah, you put it in a pot roast.
Yeah.
That's
a thing
that... That's how you make pot roast. If anybody thinks you do it any other way, you're wrong.
That's not how you make pot roast on the East Coast. If you need an East Coast pot roast recipe, you could email the podcast and I'd be happy to provide you with that.
I'll also give you mine.
If you feel helpless in the face of this soda, of this soda pot roast,
right,
we can help you out.
Here's the thing that I feel about that, because, like, obviously I'm not necessarily against using Dr. Pepper to cook pork with. It sounds like it could potentially be
delicious. I am against this
delicious.
Being kind of gross sounding, though.
Well, yes. I just think that when you... And maybe they were just sort of, like, knowing their Rachel Ray audience, which...
is a person... That's an audience that might appreciate a Dr. Pepper use.
I just want to know if there are any... I mean, these people are rich.
Right.
Like, I want to know that there is a classy recipe in this cookbook. And from all signs point to
no
at this point.
No. It worries me. Because I feel like one of the benefits of being rich is that you get to stop eating crappy processed foods and have someone make you a gourmet version of the processed
food. Yeah, you would hope.
That tastes better and won't kill you slowly over time.
I mean, there are times where I obviously want to have things that sort of, like, have, like, a nostalgia feel to me.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to cook the shit out of some cream and mushroom soup when it comes to Thanksgiving.
I know you are. Yeah.
And it's going to make me really happy. I'm going to put Velveeta in some things. And, like, it's, for that day, going to make me feel really good about life.
Right.
But I'm not trying to have
eat
a cookbook that involves any of those things.
No. I don't encourage other people to eat those things.
No. I'm not even personally trying to encourage them to do it, even though I'm cooking them for them on Thanksgiving. But, yeah, I am of the same mind. Like, if I am of the Romney's
wealth, rich person,
you want a private chef cooking you things that don't have a special ingredient of Dr. Pepper.
Well, I think part of the concern might be, or part of the issue might be, that Anne is not probably ever in a position to cook something herself anyway.
No.
So these are, like, nostalgic recipes that she remembers, and they're also the only thing she knows how to cook.
Probably so,
from 30 years ago, when was the last time she cooked.
Yeah. I wonder if the burritos recipe is from the Romney family who came here illegally
from Mexico. Yeah, exactly.
Lived in Mexico for a while.
Yeah, from Mitt's father who was born there.
Yeah, right.
You know, he's got Mexican heritage, Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
They also talked about their favorite TV shows, one of which was Modern Family.
Don't buy that for a second. I don't even know why they would list that. Why would they do that?
That doesn't seem like an approved thing
to
list. It does
not. There was just...
Two and a Half Men
there was just
is
a gay,
what you were supposed to say.
Right. There was just a gay engagement on the season premiere of Modern Family.
There's gayness happening all over the fucking place because half of Modern Family is about living in West Hollywood and having, you know, a bunch of middle-aged gay friends and having gay, you know, having your, you know, having children with gays and all sorts of things that...
Maybe they fast-forward through those parts.
Yes. They don't even know they exist.
Right.
They're not aware of all the gay things that are going
on. The Mentalist, which I buy that they watch. That doesn't shock me at all. Mm-hmm. And Castle. That seems like another
The Mentalist. Some CBS procedurals, some sort of, like, vague, you know...
Castle's on ABC. It's annoying
some
procedural.
Vague,
it's on right after Dancing with the Stars. I bet Anne watches that, too.
Oh.
Wasn't there a rumor that she was going to be on that at
one point?
I think there was.
Also, she should do that. What else is she
totally.
Up to? Like, there's nothing else she should be doing.
Yeah, she should. Mitt loves Seinfeld, apparently.
For the same reason that I hate Seinfeld. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my hatred of Seinfeld, because it's an unpopular stance. People assume that I must love Seinfeld, because I grew up in New York City, and Seinfeld sort of, like, uses this sort of, like, tone that is, like, pretty common in New York, you know. It's like hanging out with some of my friends from high school and some of my dad's friends.
You don't like it because it's not funny because you just know these people as people and, like, what they're doing
is
sort of,
like, this
is
what it's like to have a conversation with someone. Like, I don't need to sit and watch people have a boring conversation about nothing. That is something I've done enough to know that it's more fun when I'm involved. I don't like to have to passively sit and have them have this conversation.
Right, if you could be there with them, that would be another
story.
That'd
be fine. Yeah, I'd be happy to be there. I know all of these people.
Right,
I grew up with all of these people.
Right.
But I feel like it's something that people from, like, the Midwest and other parts of the country kind of, they sort of, like, enjoy watching it as sort of, like, a like, guilty pleasure and looking in the lives of, like, what is it like to live in, like, Jewish New York? Or, you know, like, it's sort of like this foreign land. It feels very exotic to them, and they're like, this humor is so unheard of.
It's not,
like,
for you.
Not unheard of.
Yeah.
Not at all.
They also played the Newlywed game while they were there, which is super annoying, but we learned some fascinating facts about all of them. And by fascinating, I mean...
Terrible.
Terrible.
Not interesting.
Right. Not... Yes, exactly. And celebrity crush, Rob Lowe. Yes. If Mitt could be any superhero, it would be Spider-Man.
Did he give a reason?
I don't know whether he did, but Anne guessed Iron Man, mysteriously. So she was wrong. I think they each got 3 out of 5 correct.
Oh, this... Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's
and
hard
we didn't
to know.
List all of them here.
It's hard to know someone
listed,
who has no personality.
I listed the most interesting ones, which was a stretch, because this next one is not interesting at all, because Anne's guilty pleasure is chocolate.
What a shock.
What a shock.
Her and all people in America and worldwide.
Yeah, Mitt got that one right.
Yeah. Well, she was giving a cliche answer, and he could only think of a cliche answer, because...
So they were...
Perfectly matched.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this next one, what annoys Anne about Mitt is that she gets annoyed that Mitt eats all the time, and he never gains any weight. It's annoying to her.
Yes, that is tough. I have other things that annoy me more about him, but...
Ditto. But she probably does, too, if I had to guess.
If I had to guess, yeah, that's true.
And he got that one right, too. So that seems like an answer that was potentially discussed before the show.
That's a joke that she says to him every time they eat.
Yes, exactly.
That's not a real thing.
No.
That's just a running joke they have that's not funny.
Right. She's actually probably more annoyed that he's schmarmy asshole.
Yeah, I would be.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Or maybe she's not annoyed by that. She's
maybe
married
she
to
loves
him.
It. Maybe the fact that she's married to the kind of person who would play a policeman and pull over his friends and, like, have blind teachers walk into doors and forcibly cut people's hair and stuff like that. Maybe that's what she likes in a man.
Well.
So in any case, there's a good chance that the government will still be shut down next week.
Yeah.
So we'll have news,
we'll have
but it will
news.
Be the
and
same.
We're going to have a special guest next week, too.
Yes. Next week, we have a very special guest. We're going to have Sean Proffitt, who has his
National Progressive Talk Radio.
He has his own sort of podcast/radio show.
Yes.
And he's going to talk about the news of the week with us.
Yeah.
And give us some
fun.
Of his perspectives on things. His show takes callers, so I bet he has some stories, too.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Yeah. In any case, we will see you then. And until then...
Enjoy the government shutdown.
Yeah,
get some Obamacare. No, get some Affordable Care Act care.
Get some Affordable Care Act care and... don't starve to death if you were relying on a federal program
right.
for food. All right.
Bye.
Talk to you next week. Bye.